You know that feeling, right? You grab your favorite snack from the pantry, maybe that plant-based latte that's become your morning ritual, or a protein bar after a workout.
Mm-hmm.
As you enjoy it, do you ever pause and wonder what precisely goes into making it taste just right, feel perfectly textured, or even, you know, deliver on its health claims,
mm-hmm.
like gut support or muscle recovery?
It's funny, we usually just focus on the end product, don't we? That immediate taste, that satisfaction.
Exactly. But behind the scenes, kind of tucked away, there's this entire incredibly complex and really impactful industry of food ingredients and flavors.
A hidden world, almost.
Yeah.
A powerhouse that touches pretty much everything we eat and drink. It really is the silent architect of our modern diet.
Yeah, foundational to the whole consumer staple sector, I guess.
Absolutely. And when you start to peel back the layers, you realize you're talking about a global enterprise. The scale is just, well, it's hard to grasp without really diving into the numbers.
They enable everything from your coffee to your dinner to taste consistent, deliver nutrition, stay fresh, all that stuff.
Precisely.
And that's exactly what we're doing today. We're taking a deep dive into an in-depth investment analysis of a company right at the forefront of this hidden world, Kerry Group PLOC.
Right. And this isn't just about the stocks and finance side, though we'll definitely get into the valuation story because it's quite compelling.
For sure. But it's really about understanding this incredible journey of strategic transformation Kerry's been on, how a company navigates and actually shapes these huge global consumer trends.
And digs into the very science of what we eat. Fascinating stuff.
Our goal today is to pull out the most important nuggets of knowledge from this detailed report we've looked at. We want to help you understand how a company, you know, with pretty humble beginnings can evolve into a genuine global leader.
We'll explore how Kerry built this really unique competitive advantage in a highly specialized market, why it seems so well positioned for future growth,
and how it keeps innovating in a market that, like you said, touches every single one of us.
Think of this deep dive as your shortcut, maybe, to understanding one of these unsung powerhouses behind your daily diet.
Okay, let's unpack this industry first. When we talk about the global food ingredients market, it's not some niche thing, is it? It feels massive, foundational.
Well, it is. It's immense. And what's really interesting about it is its defensive and resilient nature. That's key.
Defensive how?
Well, think about it. Unlike industries tied to, say, discretionary spending, things that go up and down with the economy,
mm-hmm.
people always need to eat.
Right. Obvious when you say it.
So that gives it this fundamental stability. It's less susceptible to those broader economic downturns. Even when things get tight, food is usually the last thing people cut back on significantly.
So what are the numbers? How big are we talking?
Okay. So the global food and beverage ingredients market was valued at approximately $279.6 billion in 2024. Let's call it roughly $280 billion.
Wow. Okay. That's a baseline.
Exactly. That's just the starting point.
And where is it heading? Because for a company like Kerry, and for investors thinking long-term, the growth projection is crucial, isn't it? Steady. Explosive.
It's definitely steady and significant. The projections suggest it's expected to reach somewhere between $452 billion and maybe $475 billion by 2031.
Okay, so that's quite a jump.
It implies a really robust compound annual growth rate, the CAGR, of somewhere between 5.8% and 6.2%.
Which, for a market that big, mid-single digits, is actually really healthy.
Incredibly healthy. It signals a strong foundational industry. And even more interesting, perhaps, is the specialized sub-segment that's where companies like Kerry really play. The high-value stuff that's also projected for solid growth, hitting maybe $211 billion by 2030, driven by innovation.
So this consistent growth, it provides a stable backdrop, kind of insulates the big players.
Precisely. It largely insulates the leading players, the ones with the advanced R&D, the integrated solutions like Kerry, from that broader economic volatility. It just keeps expanding, not just population growth, but critically, how the world eats is changing profoundly.
Okay. So let's get into those profound changes. Beyond just needing to eat, what are the deep structural shifts in how we think about food, our behavior, that are fueling this growth? These aren't just fads, right?
No, definitely not fads. These are powerful global trends. They reinforce each other, and they're fundamentally reshaping the whole food ecosystem.
Like what? What's top of the list?
Well, first and arguably the most impactful right now is health and wellness. Consumers everywhere are increasingly seeing food as, well, as a tool, a proactive tool for managing their health.
Not just avoiding being sick, but optimizing things.
Exactly. Optimizing performance, boosting immunity, improving mood, overall well-being. This has spurred massive demand for what they call functional ingredients,
Things that do something specific beyond basic nutrition.
Right. Think about probiotics for gut health. That's everywhere now.
Yeah.
Proteins for muscle maintenance. We're just feeling full. Botanical extracts, you know, turmeric, ginseng for cognitive support or immune boosting.
And COVID really accelerated that, didn't it?
Oh, significantly. People became much more aware of immunity, resilience. This shift forces food companies to constantly innovate. And who do they turn to? Ingredient suppliers like Kerry for sophisticated solutions that can actually deliver these benefits in a product reliably, effectively.
I've definitely seen that. Everyone's looking for that edge, aren't they, on their plate? What else?
Next up, clean label and transparency. This is a huge global movement. It's driven by this desire for simplicity, for honesty in food.
People reading labels more.
Scrutinizing them. Actively rejecting artificial additives, preservatives, stuff they can't recognize or pronounce. It's a quest for naturalness, authenticity. The data backs it up. Something like 65% of U.S. consumers prefer products with basic, recognizable ingredients.
And that forces companies to change.
Completely. They have to reformulate existing products, rethink new ones, which in turn creates this substantial high-value opportunity for ingredient suppliers. They need natural, effective alternatives for everything, color, preservation, texture. It's a massive technical challenge for the whole industry.
Makes sense. People want to know what they're eating. And, okay, what about the plant-based thing? That seems absolutely everywhere.
It is. And it's a really profound shift, driven by a mix of health, ethical, environmental concerns. It's got real momentum. Plant-based alternatives are expanding way beyond just the meat substitutes now.
Into dairy alternatives, snacks.
Milks, yogurts, cheeses, snacks, prepared meals, even candy. Plant-based ingredient sales jumped, 15% in 2023 alone? That's significant growth.
But it's not easy to just swap out meat or dairy, is it, from an ingredient perspective?
That's the key point. Oh. It introduces immense technical complexity. It's not just replacing a meat patty with beans.
Mm-hmm.
Manufacturers need to replicate the specific taste, the texture, the mouthfeel of animal products using only plants.
Getting rid of that beany taste, maybe? Achieving juiciness, creaminess.
Exactly. Overcoming off notes, achieving succulence, mimicking dairy creaminess, all without animal fats or proteins. This demands highly sophisticated specialized ingredients, novel plant proteins, natural flavors that mask off notes, complex systems for texture.
So for suppliers like Kerry, that complexity is actually an opportunity.
A huge one. It's a high-value growth area because it requires deep science and custom solutions. They're not just selling ingredients. They're solving difficult formulation problems.
Right. It's about making the plant-based option perform and taste great. Okay. And lastly, sustainability. That feels like it cuts across everything now.
It does. It's increasingly influencing purchases, especially with younger people. Sustainability and responsible sourcing are critical. Consumers want to know about the environmental footprint, the ethical credentials of brands.
And that pressure goes down the supply chain.
Absolutely. It cascades right down to the ingredient suppliers.
Yeah.
Those with strong ESG programs, environmental, social, governance, who can demonstrate sustainable sourcing, manufacturing, waste reduction, and crucially, traceable sourcing. They gain a distinct competitive advantage.
It's not just nice to have anymore.
It's a must-have for leadership. Showing where ingredients come from, that they're sourced responsibly, that operations minimize impact, that helps their big food company customers meet their sustainability goals too. It's a win-win.
Okay, so this market sounds amazing. Stable, growing, driven by these huge trends, insulated from economic bumps. So why isn't it just flooded with new companies trying to grab a piece? What keeps them out?
That's a critical question. And it points to the profitability of the established players. The global flavors and ingredients industry, it has what's called an oligopolistic structure.
Meaning a few big players dominate.
Exactly. A relatively small number of very large companies control most of the market. You've got the top four, Givaudan, International Flavors and Fragrances, IFF, Symrise, and DSM Firmenich. Together, they have over 50% market share.
And Kerry Group, where do they fit?
Kerry is a major player, often seen as leading that next tier down, but still absolutely substantial and global. The barriers to entry protecting these guys, they are formidable, truly.
Like what? What's the first big hurdle?
First, high R&D investment. We're talking massive, sustained investment in cutting-edge research. Food science, molecular gastronomy, biotech, fermentation, advanced chemistry. It takes decades and billions to build that capability and the patents that go with it.
Not something a startup can just jump into.
Not even close. Second, and this is absolutely crucial for understanding the stickiness here, is deep customer integration. Ingredient suppliers aren't just vendors selling off a catalog.
They're more like partners.
Deeply embedded partners. In their customers' product development cycles, big food companies have core supplier lists. And getting on one takes years of proven reliability, innovation, trust. And once an ingredient system is designed into a successful product, a global drink, a popular snack.
You can't just swap it out easily.
Prohibitively high costs and risks.
Yep.
Imagine reformulating a flagship global brand. Years of retesting stability, shelf life, taste panels, consumer trials, regulatory approvals in dozens of countries. It's millions, maybe billions, in R&D and lost momentum. Incredibly sticky customers.
Wow. So once you're in, you're really in. That's a powerful moat. What else?
Third, global scale and supply chain complexity. You need a huge global manufacturing footprint to serve multinational giants. You need a super complex, resilient supply chain sourcing thousands of raw materials from all over the world.
And dealing with local tastes and rules.
Exactly. Navigating diverse local tastes, regulations, logistics. The operational sophistication needed is immense. Very hard for a new player to build from scratch.
And the final barrier.
Regulatory expertise. The rules for food ingredients are incredibly complex. They vary massively by region, country, even ingredient and how it's used. An ingredient okay in the EU might not be in the US, or China might have unique rules.
So you need dedicated experts just for that.
Big players like Kerry have teams of legal, scientific, regulatory experts just managing compliance. It's a massive hurdle for newcomers. It takes huge resources and know-how.
Understanding all that, the market structure, the barriers, it really sets the stage for understanding Kerry's strategy, doesn't it? Why their transformation was so significant. So let's trace Kerry's story. It didn't start as this global food science giant, did it? What were its origins?
No, not at all. It's actually a pretty remarkable Irish journey. Kerry Group started back in 1972. It was a small dairy cooperative in County Kerry, Ireland.
Yeah.
Just focused on milk processing, basic dairy products.
Just a local co-op.
Pretty much. Yeah. Fast forward about five decades, and it's evolved into a genuine world leader. Food, beverage, even pharma ingredients now. Employs over 23,000 people globally.
Supplying thousands of products worldwide.
Over 18,000 different products to customers in more than 140 countries. So, yeah, it's a global force now, deeply embedded in the supply chains of the world's biggest food and beverage companies.
That's some transformation. But what was the big strategic shift recently? The one that made it this pure play powerhouse we're talking about? That sounds very deliberate.
It was extremely deliberate. This is where the strategic story really gets interesting. The new Kerry we see today is the result of this multi-year, very disciplined strategy. To focus almost exclusively on its core, high-growth, high-margin, taste and nutrition business, TNN.
So getting rid of other stuff.
Exactly. Deliberately shedding businesses that didn't fit that profile anymore. It wasn't just selling assets. It was about sharpening the whole company's focus. Laser focus.
What were the key sales?
Two really significant divestitures stand out. First, they sold their consumer foods, business meats, and meals brands back in June 2021. That was for around $923 million.
Okay.
Then, even more symbolically, they divested Dairy Ireland, their original legacy dairy processing and consumer products business. That finished up in late 2024 for about $500 million.
Wow. Selling off their actual origins, that's bold.
It really was.
What was the thinking behind that? Seems counterintuitive almost. Any pushback internally?
Well, the core rationale was to exit businesses that were lower margin, more volatile, and more capital intensive. Those legacy operations, while historically important, often had direct exposure to commodity price swings, milk, meat prices.
And different business models, more consumer facing.
Right, requiring different marketing, distribution, not really leveraging Kerry's core strength in deep scientific expertise to command premium pricing.
So the CEO was clear on this.
Very clear. Edmund Scanlon explicitly said that Dairy Ireland disposal marked a significant step, transforming Kerry into a pure-play, global business-to-business taste and nutrition company. It wasn't just financial. It reshaped their DNA.
Enhancing growth, improving margins, clarifying the story for investors.
Exactly. Better growth profile, better margins, and a much clearer investment narrative. No longer a diversified conglomerate, but a focused TNN leader. That clarity is very appealing to investors wanting pure exposure to these trends.
Okay, makes sense. So what does this new Kerry look like now? What are the main engines of the TNN division?
Post-investment, pretty much everything is concentrated in that taste and nutrition division. That's the engine. For fiscal 2024, TNN generated $6.9 billion in revenue. And what's really key is it delivered underlying volume growth of 3.4%.
Which means they sold more stuff, even if prices changed.
Precisely. And that 3.4% actually outperformed the broader food and beverage end markets. That suggests they're not just riding the wave, they're actively gaining market share. Their solutions are winning.
And who are they selling to within TNN?
Two main channels. First is food service. That has strong momentum in 2024, 6.8% volume growth, driven largely by menu innovations with big quick service restaurants, coffee chains.
Like a new seasonal drink or a new fast food item carries behind the scenes.
Often, yes.
Yeah.
Co-developing those taste systems. The second channel is retail, supplying ingredients for the packaged goods you buy in the supermarket. That grew a solid 1.8% in 2024. Good performance in the Americas and APMEA regions, driven by new product launches, reformulations.
So this new carry is truly global. Where exactly does it operate? What does that geographic mix tell us?
That global footprint is critical for resilience and growth. Great diversification across different regional dynamics. If one market slows, others can pick up the slack.
Where's the biggest chunk of the business?
The Americas. By far the largest region. $3.8 billion in 2024, about 55% of TNN revenue. And strong growth there too, 4.1% volume growth, driven by consumer demand for innovative foods, especially in the U.S.
Okay, what about other regions?
Then you have APMEA, Asia Pacific, Middle East, and Africa. That's a really fast-growing region, $1.7 billion, maybe 25% of TNN revenue. And robust volume growth, 4.8%. Huge long-term potential there as diets evolve.
And Europe?
Europe is about $1.5 billion, roughly 20% of TNN revenue. Volumes were slightly down for the full year, minus 0.1%. But importantly, performance improved through the year. It returned to growth in the second half. So recovery in a mature but still key market.
Good diversification. Any other geographic highlights, emerging markets specifically?
Yes, absolutely. Emerging markets are a critical growth engine. Business volumes there jumped a strong 6.5% in 2024, led by the Middle East, Latin America, Southeast Asia.
Places where diets are changing rapidly.
Exactly. Urbanization, rising incomes, creating huge demand for the specialized ingredients Kerry provides, speaks volumes about their long-term growth potential.
Okay, we know what they do, where they do it, the scale, but what's Kerry's core promise? Their unique value proposition. What makes them indispensable, not just another supplier?
Their purpose statement is inspiring food, nourishing life. But what that really means in practice is they act as an indispensable innovation partner. They go way beyond just selling an ingredient.
They co-create.
Yes. They leverage their deep science, their broad technology portfolio to co-create comprehensive solutions with their clients. Think about the challenges food companies face now.
Healthier, tastier, clean label, sustainable, cost-effective, all at once.
It's a monumental task. Kerry steps in to solve these multifaceted challenges holistically. Say a beverage company wants a new sugar-free, gut-healthy drink that tastes amazing and lasts on the shelf.
Kerry doesn't just sell them a sweetener and a probiotic.
No, they engineer the entire system. The perfect natural sweetener blend, a flavor that masks any probiotic off-notes, a stabilization system for shelf life. They deliver a complete, market-ready solution.
De-risking it for the client.
Totally. It de-risks the whole product development cycle. This unique value prop, this partnership approach that really sets the stage for understanding their competitive advantages, their secret sauce, if you will.
Okay, the secret sauce. Every strong business has that moat, right? Something that protects it. What exactly is Kerry's competitive moat in this sophisticated taste and nutrition market?
That's a great way to put it. Kerry has definitely carved out a distinct defensible position. And it's rooted in that unique from food for food science heritage we talked about. Mm-hmm. It's not just one thing. It's a powerful combination of strengths, really hard for others to replicate.
Before we dig into those strengths, how do they stack up against the giants? Givaudan, IFF, Symrise, these are huge established leaders.
They are formidable, no doubt. Givaudan is often seen as the leader in the broader flavors and fragrances space. Very high margins. IFF got huge with the DuPont merger. Symrise is a key European innovator. Plus, you've got big agricultural players like ADM, Cargill moving more into specialty ingredients. It's a tough neighborhood.
And the report mentioned a valuation gap.
Yes, there's an interesting point in the benchmarking table. Kerry currently trades at a lower valuation multiple, like EBITDA, compared especially to Givaudan. That gap is central to the investment thesis, suggesting potential undervaluation.
Okay, but despite that current gap, why does Kerry deserve to be compared? What makes its advantage unique, allowing it to thrive against these giants?
Right. There are three primary interconnected strengths that really differentiate Kerry.
What's the first one?
First is the integrated solutions model. This is their core differentiator. It comes directly from that from food for food heritage. Unlike competitors who might specialize just flavors or just proteins or just enzymes,
Carrie understands the whole picture.
They understand the entire food matrix, how ingredients interact in a complex food system, a drink, a bakery item, a savory meal. They don't just sell an isolated component.
And they combine different technologies, taste and nutrition.
Exactly. That's the power. They excel at combining their vast portfolio of taste tech flavors, extracts, smoke, with their nutrition tech preservatives, enzymes, proteins, emulsifiers, to deliver a single holistic solution.
Give me an example.
Okay. Imagine a food company launching a plant-based frozen meal. They need it. Low sodium, clean label, sustainable. Carrie doesn't just provide the protein, they engineer the whole thing. The right protein for texture, a natural flavor system to boost taste without sodium, a clean label preservative, sustainable sourcing documents.
So it simplifies everything for the customer, reduces risk, and speeds things up.
Immensely valuable. Simplifies R&D, cuts time to market, de-risks the launch. It makes Carrie a strategic partner, not just a component supplier, solving those multifaceted challenges.
That seems incredibly powerful, like a bespoke full-service solution. What's the second advantage?
The second is customer-centric research, development, and application, our DNA. Their innovation investment is huge, over 1,100 food scientists, big R&D spend. But it's the application, how they deploy it, that's key.
Our DNA, not just R&D.
Right, research, development, and application. Their teams work collaboratively with customers, often inside the customer's own facilities, solving specific real-world product development problems side by side.
Embedded teams.
Pretty much. This deep embedded relationship builds incredible loyalty and creates extremely high switching costs. Think about it. A major global brand designs a flagship product with a complex Carrie ingredient system.
That system is tested, approved, globally rolled out.
Exactly. Rigorous testing for stability, shelf life, taste, regulations everywhere. For that customer to then reformulate with a different supplier, it's incredibly difficult. Takes years, costs millions, huge risk to the brand. Makes those relationships incredibly sticky.
So they become almost an extension of the customer's R&D. Indispensable. And the third strength.
Third is global scale and local expertise. With over 150 manufacturing sites worldwide, they have the global scale needed to serve the biggest multinational food companies efficiently. Consistent supply, uniform quality, reliable innovation everywhere.
But scale isn't enough, right? Food is local.
Crucially, yes. That global footprint is paired with regional innovation centers and deep local application expertise. This is where they shine in understanding diverse palates.
So they help global brands adapt products locally.
Precisely. A flavor profile popular in the US might need tweaking for Southeast Asia. A savory note in Europe might need different umami for China. Carrie's local scientists get these nuances. They fine-tune solutions, co-create products that resonate culturally. It makes their global reach truly effective.
Okay, these three advantages, integrated solutions, embedded RDNA, global scale with local touch, they really paint a picture of a strong competitive position. And presumably, this translates into strong financials.
It absolutely does, which brings us right to the numbers and the value story.
All right, let's get into the financials. Looking back over the past decade or so, what story do Carrie's numbers tell? Does the performance match the strategic transformation?
The numbers tell a very compelling story, absolutely reinforcing the quality of the business. You see a proven track record, consistent growth, disciplined margin expansion, strong cash flow. That consistency is really the hallmark of a high-quality defensive company.
What about revenue growth?
Revenue grew steadily from about $6.1 billion in 2015 up to $8.0 billion in 2023. It settled slightly lower in 2024 at $7.98 billion, but there's a really important nuance there.
Okay. What's the nuance?
Well, that headline reported revenue showing a tiny decline, 0.5% in 2024, wasn't a sign of weakness at all. It was significantly impacted by two deliberate choices. First, strategic price reductions, negative 1.9% pricing as input costs eased and they passed savings to customers.
Okay, that makes sense.
And the second, the portfolio disposals we talked about, selling off those non-core businesses. The key underlying metric to focus on was the robust 3.3% volume growth in the core taste and nutrition segment.
Ah, so they sold more product, gained share, even as prices adjusted down.
Exactly. Healthy end market demand, market share gains, positive solutions are winning. Very healthy sign.
And profitability, especially with that negative pricing. Must have been tough.
You'd think so, but profitability has been a real standout. Group EBITDA, that's a key measure of operating profit, increased by a healthy 7.4% to $1.3 billion in 2024.
And the margins?
Critically, the group EBITDA margin expanded significantly by 120 basis points up to 15.7%. That's 1.2 percentage points higher profitability. And the core T&N business was even stronger, its margin expanding 130 basis points to 16.1% in the first half.
Wow. Expanding margins while lowering prices. How?
It really demonstrates their strong cost control. That Accelerate Operational Excellence program they have seems to be working. Improving efficiency, optimizing the supply chain. It shows they're not just relying on price hikes for profit. They're fundamentally improving their cost structure and the value they offer.
That's impressive. Increasing margins when pricing is negative is rare. A real quality indicator.
Absolutely. A powerful indicator of a high-quality, well-managed business.
What about the quality of those earnings? Do they turn into actual cash easily?
Yes. Another hallmark of quality. Kerry's model is highly cash generative. They consistently convert a very high proportion of earnings into free cash flow. That gives them incredible financial flexibility.
How high are we talking?
In the first half of 2024, they generated $445 million in free cash flow. That was an exceptional cash conversion rate of 131%.
131%. More cash than earnings.
Exactly. Shows extremely efficient working capital management, strong operational discipline. They're very good at managing cash.
And how do they treat shareholders with all that cash? Do they share it? Signal confidence.
Definitely. Management has a consistent, disciplined approach centered on a progressive dividend policy.
Meaning they aim to increase the dividend each year.
That's the goal. It signals confidence in long-term earnings and cash flow. And Kerry has a long track record of doing just that, increasing dividends annually. For fiscal 2024, the total dividend went up 10.1% to 127.1 cents per share. Reliable, growing income for shareholders.
Okay, strong financials. So how do they decide where to put that money to work? Capital allocation strategy, has that changed with the transformation?
It really has evolved. It went from a phase of aggressive portfolio building through M&A, they acquired 21 companies over time, to a more mature phase now, focused on optimization and boosting shareholder returns.
So M&A is less important now.
It's become much more targeted. The focus shifted from just building scale to acquiring specific high-value technologies, things that deepen their capabilities in key growth areas like biotech, fermentation, health ingredients, building technological depth, reinforcing the moat.
Can you give examples?
Sure. Niacet in 2021, big one for preservation tech. BioSearch Life, also in 2021 for nutraceuticals. Selecta in 2022 for biotech and enzyme engineering. And the lactase enzyme business in 2023, crucial for dairy-free. These are precision strikes, enhancing specific capabilities for future needs.
And the divestitures were key to this too.
Absolutely instrumental. Selling Meats and Meals, Sweet Ingredients, Dairy Island, that was actively pruning the portfolio, sharpening the focus, shedding lower margin businesses, truly transforming Kerry into that pure play T&N company. Streamlines the model, boosts margins, makes it more appealing to investors.
And they still invest in organic growth, R&D.
Oh yeah, consistently. Complements the M&A. That $238 million in R&D in 2022, funding innovation centers, powering that co-creation with customers, keeps them at the cutting edge.
So strategic M&A, smart divestitures, organic investment, and shareholder returns.
Yes. With the big transformation done, management explicitly pivoted to more direct shareholder returns. Signal of confidence. So the progressive dividend we mentioned plus.
The share buyback.
Exactly. In 2025, they started a significant 300 million share buyback program. That's a clear signal management. Thinks the shares are undervalued. It reduces share count, usually boosts EPS growth and value over time.
And they manage debt carefully?
They do. Maintain a prudent capital structure. Debt to equity around 0.60, net debt to EBITDA about 2.9x. Healthy ratios for this kind of company. Not over-leveraged. Gives them plenty of capacity for future investments and returns.
Okay, so strong business, great financials, smart capital allocation. What does the market think it's worth? Is it reflecting all this? You mentioned that disconnect.
This is where it gets really compelling. The potential undervaluation. When you look at relative valuation, Kerry trades at a substantial discount to its direct peers, especially Givaudan.
How big a discount?
Well, its forward PE ratio is around 15.7x. The peer average is maybe 22x, and Givaudan's over 26x. But the really key metric is EBITDA.
Enterprise value to EBITDA takes debt into account.
Right. More holistic. Kerry's trailing EBITDA is around 12.5x to 13.0x. That's a stark discount, maybe 35-40%. Compared to Givaudan at over 20.5x. It's even below Symrise around 14.5x.
That valuation gap is the core of the investment thesis then.
It's the central pillar. It screams potential undervaluation given the quality, market position, prospects.
Do independent valuations or analysts agree?
Yes. While the report didn't detail a DCF, third-party analyses often suggest the stock is undervalued, maybe 10% to over 50%, based on future cash flow potential. And the consensus of 11 sell-side analysts covering carry, their average 12-month price target is 105 to 109 euro.
Which, from a recent price around 81, implies decent upside.
Yeah, potential upside of 30-34%. Strong buy signal from the professionals.
And this ties into that sum of the parts idea, unlocking value.
Exactly. By selling those lower-margin businesses, they unlocked trapped value. But the market seems slow to fully reevaluate the remaining higher-quality pure-play entity. It still seems to have a bit of a conglomerate discount that isn't justified anymore. That's the opportunity. The market catching up, re-rating the multiples closer to peers.
That's a compelling picture. And even more so, considering the crazy few years we've just had globally.
Yeah, the past few years. Unprecedented challenges, right? Soaring inflation, supply chain chaos, shifting consumer behavior. How did carry handle all that? Did the transformation help them weather the storm?
It really did. That period, 2022 to 2024, was defined by that unprecedented macroeconomic volatility. But carry's ability to navigate it, even thrive sometimes, really showcases its resilience and the strength of its strategy.
How did they handle inflation? That hit everyone hard.
Okay, managing inflation and commodity prices. In 2022, they faced 8% raw material cost inflation. Huge headwind. But they managed it effectively through pricing actions passed to customers, smart hedging.
But then inflation eased, right? And as it subsided in late 2023 and 2024, carry showed that partnership approach. They proactively passed savings back to customers, resulting in that negative pricing minus 1.9% for FY24, minus 3.0% in the first half.
Lowering prices for customers?
Yes. And here's the crucial bit. Despite that pricing headwind, they successfully expanded their EBITDA margins by 120 basis points.
That's incredible. Protecting and enhancing profitability in both inflationary and deflationary times.
It's a key indicator of a high-quality, exceptionally well-managed business. Shows their operational excellence programs are working. They can absorb cost changes and still improve the bottom line. Builds trust with customers, too.
What about the supply chain chaos? Ports clogged, ships stuck.
Supply chain resilience. That was huge. Carry sees its supply chain as a value-adding function, the lifeblood of the company. Their investments in robust controls, predictive analytics, that diverse global manufacturing footprint, that was critical.
So they kept delivering when others struggled?
Largely, yes. Mitigated disruptions, ensured supply continuity. While competitors might have had stockouts, Carry was consistently delivering. That cemented relationships.
And currency swings, being global, reporting in euros.
Always a factor. Foreign exchange fluctuations, FX. With 55% of TNN revenue in the Americas, the Euro-IDD rate matters a lot. H1 2024 saw a negative 0.9% impact on reported revenue growth from currency.
But they manage it.
They do. Robust hedging programs to reduce volatility, protect earnings and cash flow. It's ongoing, but they're well equipped.
So beyond just reacting, how did leadership execute the long-term vision during all this chaos? Did it delay anything?
The biggest thing was successfully completing that final phase of the portfolio transformation, selling Dairy Ireland in late 2024. That landmark deal reshaping the company into a pure-play leader.
Getting that done amidst global turmoil speaks volumes.
Absolutely. Shows conviction, execution capability, didn't get sidetracked, maintained strategic focus. Also, key leadership stability, like appointing Oliver Kelly to head North America in 2022, their biggest market.
Okay, so if the last few years were a tough test, a crucible, how well positioned is Carry for whatever comes next, the next economic cycle? What's the takeaway?
I think looking at everything, Carry Group seems exceptionally well positioned. The strategic transformation created a business that's more focused, more profitable, less volatile.
And it's in a defensive sector.
Exactly. Food and beverage, low cyclicality. Demand tends to be stable because, well, people always need to eat.
Plus, they're aligned with those big long-term trends.
Squarely aligned. Health, clean label, plant-based, sustainability. Mm-hmm. These aren't fads. They're structural shifts providing a multi-decade tailwind.
And they have the financial strength.
Strong balance sheet, robust cash flow give them significant financial flexibility. for investment, strategic M&A, returning value to shareholders through dividends, buybacks.
And finally, the valuation.
The current valuation, that discount to peers, offers a compelling margin of safety and a clear catalyst for re-rating as the market fully recognizes the transformation and their alignment with these powerful trends.
So combining all that, resilient model, strong tailwinds, attractive valuation.
It makes Kerry Group a really compelling example of a business prepared not just for future uncertainty, but potentially poised for significant long-term growth and value creation. Hashtag tag outro.
So there you have it. We've journeyed through this intricate, often invisible world of food ingredients and flavors.
It's quite something when you pull back the curtain.
Totally. We've seen how a really bold strategic transformation can unlock serious value and redefine a company, and discovered how a powerhouse like Kerry Group is just so deeply intertwined with everything on our plates, shaping what we eat, how it tastes, how it impacts us.
It makes you think about the sheer complexity, the science, the strategy behind even the simplest food choices we make every day.
It absolutely does. You know, as consumers keep demanding more better health, ethical sourcing, amazing new flavors, innovative textures, what other unexpected innovations are going to become commonplace in our kitchens and restaurants in the next, say, 5 or 10 years?
That's the exciting question, isn't it? The pace of change is incredible.
And what does Kerry's journey teach us about these unsung heroes? The company's literally building the future of food, one ingredient, one solution at a time.
Maybe next time you pick up a packaged food, glance at that label.
Yeah.
Just take a moment. Consider the story behind each ingredient, the complex ecosystem that brought it all together. It's a vast, evolving landscape, absolutely full of hidden innovation.